Welcome to the Fed Mission Success podcast series. MACPAR has recently been publishing lots of content around agile transformation. And for this episode, Faria Khan, marketing manager at MACPAR, will be hosting a deep dive discussion about how MACPAR approaches agile in the federal environment with Akhil Iqbal, who is a scrum master at MACPAR, and Jim Gross, who's the agile lead at MACPAR. And with that, we'll hand it over to Faria.
Hey guys, thank you so much, Matt. Jim and Akhil, thanks for taking the time to join us today. So we're really excited to deep dive into how we approach agile in the federal government environment. So just to kick this off, can you guys tell me a little bit about what are the benefits of adopting agile for the federal government?
Sure. Hey, Faria, this is Jim. In a general terms, the benefits of embracing agile in a federal space are you're going to get results such as an increase in efficiency, better communication. Your teams are going to become more collaborative because agile kind of intrinsically makes teams work closer together. There's going to be more transparency into what teams are working on. And of course, you're going to save money through that increase of efficiency. And you're going to produce value in a faster way than you would in a traditional waterfall methodology.
Okay, so that's awesome. And that makes a lot of sense. But I know that it's easier said than done. So let's talk about what are some of the challenges for federal agencies to shift to this model?
Yeah, so this is Akhil. Hi, Faria. Hi, Matt. Thank you for having me. Some challenges that we might face, like kind of going off of what Jim was stating about providing value, increasing efficiency, sometimes that is kind of, I would say, attacked with decisions in the leadership area. So that kind of pulls the teams down from making progress within providing value. Sometimes you have to take decisions up the chain of command and then kind of slows down the process. So another thing I would say is having too much, I guess, transparency within leadership and teams. So having too many individuals within team meetings, that kind of slows down the process as well. So you would want to have lesser team sizes and, I guess, less chain of command in order for your teams to make the most efficient approach to provide value.
Yeah, along with that, the reticence of some in leadership in the space to allow the teams to make their own decisions, to give the teams the autonomy to, when time is critical, to choose what they're going to do, that also does hinder the process as well.
No, that's amazing insight. Thank you both for sharing that. We did just, you know, also publish a blog post that both of you contributed to about the importance of decentralized decision making and how we should put the decision power into the project team rather than the higher ups. And, you know, one of the most challenging things about this is the government is used to operating with a very clear chain of command, and that's how they've been operating for a long time. So, do you guys have any insight into how we would shift out of this chain of command into a more collaborative, decentralized kind of way?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, just because you're embracing an agile mindset, it doesn't mean that chain of command just goes away. It's just approached differently. But mindset is key. Adopting an agile mindset is where we get a full buy-in from folks at all levels of the project. We're talking senior project managers. We're talking the product owners and product managers, otherwise somewhat known as the business or the business experts. We're talking all the way down to developers, testers, and your scrum masters. When they're all working together on an agile track, chain of command still exists. It's just changed. For example, because everything is done transparently, management should have a good idea of what is going on the teams without having to be present in every single meeting. They can back away from the day-to-day operations and trust the scrum masters to really guide the teams to where they want to go, and trust that the scrum masters are going to have the wherewithal to bring issues to them in a timely fashion and in a way that doesn't affect the outcome of the project. Another way is to be active in the sprint demos. The sprint demos are done at the end of every sprint, usually every 2 weeks, to show everything that was accomplished in that period. So it's a way for leadership to see, hey, this is the value we're delivering every 2 weeks. And that builds trust with the teams. You know, leadership can say, hey, the team said they were going to do this, and they did it. And we see it through this demo, and maybe we can trust them to keep doing this.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense to me. And it seems really like the building trust is the essential part, right? Because it makes sense, like the people on the project level will be able to update their leadership the most effectively. So how does a project team build that trust with leadership so they can shift to that approach? Akil, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways you can actually build trust with team members. And that is honestly just sitting in the teams and talking within the retros about the things that teams can work on, right? And then you kind of get ideas from different people. You engage in conversation. You engage in celebrating success. You engage in, you know, taking any type of criticism that you may have that may help support the team. So kind of building that trust within the retrospective type meetings, and then taking that within the sprint and then kind of formulating that plan to move forward in that sprint to kind of say, hey, this is what we talked about. This is the ideas that we had. This is what we can do. Let's go and do it. And just kind of put trust in one another that we are going to go and do that. So, and then once we do that, we talk about the success, we celebrate our success, and then we move forward from there. So I think Jim stated it best that trust is the biggest key. And in order to build that, and it's the biggest thing here is communication and that open transparency and line of communication that the team and leadership should have.
You're so right, Akil. And on an enterprise level, on a higher level, because Akil just did a great job explaining how you build trust on the team. And then to extend that trust even further, so as your team has your team reviews and retrospectives at the end of every sprint, you also have those at the end of every release cycle or program increment, whatever you're going to refer to them as, where you can show everything that was done for the last 8 to 10 weeks in actual working functional code to the leadership, and then engage immediately in an inspect and adapt event, a retrospective on a higher level with more of the stakeholders than you would as a team level retrospective. And by involving them in that, they get to really discuss their positives and negatives, and you can learn and grow from there as well.
Yeah, I love that. Those are really make a lot of sense, and it's a roadmap to helping this agile transition happen. I also know that in our conversations, something that has come up is anti-patterns is something that holds back the shift to agile. Can you guys define what anti-patterns are first? And then can we talk about what are some anti-patterns in the federal space?
Sure. Generally, anti-patterns are negative actions that are repeated by teams. They are the opposite of a good pattern. I know that seems a little obvious, but it needs to be stated that way. For example, your daily stand-up should be about 15 minutes long, and each person on the team would give a quick answer to the three questions of the daily stand-up, which is, of course, what did you work on yesterday? What are you committing to work on today? And do you have any blockers or impediments? So a common anti-pattern that, gosh, we see all the time is that daily stand-up, A, starts to become a status update where people get up and say, I worked on this, and then I'm going to work on this thing, and I'm working on these three things, and I changed this piece of code. And then it starts to get longer and longer and longer. And there's a lot of discussion during the daily stand-up. Whereas a good pattern on the daily stand-up would be each person would answer those three questions. Any discussion other than a real quick one-off question gets tabled till a meet after or parking lot at the end of the meeting. And it usually should take about 15 minutes for a normal-sized agile team. I mean, currently, both Akil and I have rather large teams we're working on, and we still do tend to finish the daily stand-up in around 15 minutes or so. There's lots of other anti-patterns you can run into in agile. In fact, I could probably talk for 2 to 3 hours just on anti-patterns.
No, that makes complete sense. And we've all been in that meeting. I definitely totally understand how that happens. Now, I know you guys had in mind there's a few specific anti-patterns we want to address, you know, in the federal space. Can we get into those?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about scope stretching. Scope stretching happens all the time. It's also known as scope creep. And that is where, due to either changing priorities or oversight from leadership, more and more stories are tried to be forced into sprints. Whereas classically in Agile, you have your developers and testers are going to work together to decide what stories are pulled into the sprint. When you start running into scope creep, that is when you tend to get in a little more influence coming in from the business side or the management side. And so you start to end up taking on more stories than you really have capacity for. This stretches the team thin. The developers have to work quicker to get the stories to the testers. The testers have to maybe think about cutting corners to their testing in order to complete testing on all of the stories that are being completed by the development team. So one way to insulate against that is, as a scrum master, is to A, work closely with the product team to make sure that all of the stories that are being pulled in are ready to work, that the development can start almost immediately, and that they've been well refined. Another thing to do as a scrum master is to push back against those extra stories being crammed in, to hold fast your historical velocity, not as a hard and fast number, but as a real solid guide as to how much you can realistically take on in the confines of any given sprint. And finally, you need to be able to, as we mentioned earlier, have that level of trust where you can push back to leadership a little bit saying, hey, we understand that this is a very high priority for you. What can we replace in order to bring you this content? Because we can only do X amount of stories. So let's work together to redefine the priorities.
That's awesome. That makes a lot of sense, Jim. Thank you so much for explaining that. Akil, do you want to talk about team size? I know that's another one.
Team size is a huge anti-pattern that teams usually face. And that kind of boils down to having too much going onto the plate and too much being produced at the same time. Therefore, you have a lot of issues with code being integrated together and a lot of issues come about it. The best course of action that a team should take is to have smaller team sizes that kind of work in smaller sets, and that will allow you to produce more value because more and more smaller incremental portions of value are being put together and is slowly building up to, I guess, the bigger value that the project or contract is trying to achieve.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Even from my own experience, just working in smaller teams, I notice it's just a lot more effective. Agile just makes so much sense. I know another one is missing guidance documentation. Jim, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, absolutely. We all know that in agile methodologies, you're really focusing on people and products over documentation. But that's not to say that documentation completely goes away. There are important documents that can really smooth a lot of the operations of the scrum teams that if you don't have them, it really makes it difficult to do things such as close stories. So for example, two pieces of guidance documentation that really are almost crucial for every organization to have are your definition of done and your definition of ready. So your definition of ready might be a set of checkpoints for each story or epic to hit before development can begin on it. Those might be having actionable acceptance criteria, having a business priority and a business value assigned, things like that. For a definition of done, which is possibly one of the most crucial guide documents in the world of Agile, your definition of done defines when a story can be closed or even when an epic can be closed. So on a story level, it might have been development is complete, testing is complete, the story has passed UI UX review, the story has been checked for compliance with ADA guidelines, otherwise known as 508 compliance. Various things like that to then say, okay, we can close this story and move on from it. Also, another idea of a document that you really, really want to have is some sort of plan for what happens when a defect is opened, both something found in production and something found during testing of new code. When is a defect opened? When can a story be closed that has a defect attached to it? Those sort of processes are very, very important to being able to continue to produce value in a efficient and speedy way.
That makes complete sense. Thank you for that. It's really useful. And the last one we have on our list here is lack of participation in team meetings. Akil, do you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah. So there's a very common anti-pattern where lack of participation can lead to many, many different types of failures within the team. And it can happen even on the leadership level, and it kind of trickles down its effect down to the team level, if not taken care of. And to combat that, participation on the team level and the leadership level has to go hand in hand. And I think that main key here, I think going back to what Jim was stating, that when Agile is implemented, sometimes people in roles of leadership tend to think that, you know, their role has been decimated and they're not going to be part of the process moving forward. So they kind of back off, right? And so Agile allows them to actually be more in control and be a little bit more involved in the process than they really think. And the way that works is the leadership meetings allow teams to do a lot more effort and allow them to have more detail into the value that they're going to be providing. So the participation from leadership in their leadership meetings trickles down to the team, whereas teams then take that information, understand the different criteria, understand the requirements, understand the details, and then implement them. And vice versa, like it can go back the other way as well. So if the team is lacking that participation, the work is not getting done. And then leadership is going to turn around and say, hey, you know, we can't get this done because, you know, we have this issue of not being able to get this done due to lack of resource or lack of information. So participation and communication here is going to be very key in order to, you know, get away with going away from this anti-pattern that we see a lot in different organizations and projects, especially in the federal space.
If I can jump in on this too, one of the biggest struggles that I've come across here in the federal space, especially with contractors in an agile space, that hinders this sort of open communication, that kind of stifles participation, is fear. And I know that's weird to say, but a lot of folks who are federal contractors, you know, do have a bit of fear because in the past, you know, when something goes wrong, the contractors are often the first ones to get looked at for why things went wrong. And so one of the big challenges in Agile is getting everyone to feel safe in this space. You know, a lot of that also has to do with getting, as we spoke on many, many different times today, spoken on getting the buy-in from leadership and the understanding of how Agile works, so that these, you know, testers and developers feel that they are completely able and encouraged to openly speak during the meetings, give criticisms when they think things are not going the correct way, openly discuss ways of doing things, and openly disagree with each other. Any good team should be able to handle a disagreement by talking through it, and that open communication will make things so much better in the long run.
You know, this is just, Agile is really how to have great relationships, because that is really the key to communicating well overall. It makes so much sense.
Way to sum it up in like 5 words. Thanks.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm trying to have a more agile personal life as well. But no, this is really great. Thank you guys for all these details. They're so valuable. So just to close this out.
Can we do that in real life? Can we have agile interactions with people all over the place? Like if I'm going to talk to a person, can I just cut them off after 15 minutes and walk away? Because
yeah, tell me how that goes with your family, Jim. Try that out before back. Well, you know, this has been just so great. I really appreciate you guys coming on the podcast today. To close this out, can you guys just talk a little bit about what MACPAR can offer as a consultant to federal agencies in their agile transition?
Why don't you take it first, Akil?
Yeah, so I think MacPAR can play a huge role in any organization trying to make that transformation to the agile world. I know MacPAR is very dedicated to their craft, and they're very dedicated to the people that they're bringing on the projects and contracts. And they're looking to provide the best possible resources in order to combat any issues, you know, transitioning from waterfall to agile. And with that being said, the resources that we have currently, you know, they're amazing people with a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience, who can provide great value in order for, you know, for any contract project to have great success and efficiency.
Yeah. And Freya, I want to thank you for having me on today, because it's so great to get agile discussions out there when it's just kind of something that a lot of people know about, a lot of people do, but very few people sit there and discuss. So first off, thank you for doing this. This is just a great opportunity. Now, why should you work with MacPAR? One of the first things I was told when I was first hired by MacPAR was that it was a family company and it treats its employees like family. And a lot of companies say that, but really for all the places I've worked, MacPAR is the first place where I've really found that to be true. They really do treat their employees like family. And that's important to me because really what is an agile team but a small family? They work together towards a common goal. They're sometimes dysfunctional, but in the end, they'll pull together, work through any issues, and deliver when it's needed. So I think, you know, bringing in a company with some agile expertise, with that small company family attitude to address agile, which is really about building relationships, about building teams, about building a family, you can't go wrong.
That's beautiful. I love that, guys. Thank you so much. Jim Gross, can you please close us out with a few fun facts for today?
Sure. Here's some geographical fun facts for you. Did you know that Reno, Nevada is farther west than Los Angeles, California? Did you know that there is only one state in the lower 48 states that only touches one other state? That's Maine. And finally, this is my favorite geographical fun fact. The state of Arkansas borders six other states. And due to the fluke of its geography, you can drive south out of Arkansas into all six of those states. This has been Fun Facts with Jim. Facts may not be fun.
Jim, as always, those are incredible. Thank you so much. And hey, I don't want to give away all the secret sauce, but another agile tip is if you throw in some fun facts at the end of your status meetings, they might be more fun. Well, thank you so much and have a great day.